On with stocks and what's working now. Tune in Saturday morning at 10 to see.
With the current stock market volatility, isn't it nice to know that in bonds, the rules are the rules of the rules? Every Saturday morning on What's Working Now, we talk about bonds and how they work. Wouldn't you like to listen in?
What's Working Now, Saturday mornings at 10, presented by TriStar Financial on the Biz Radio Network.
You're listening to Bar Talk on the Biz Radio Network with Daphne Patterson and Nicole DeBord. I wanted to give you Nicole's phone number again real quick. It's 713-526-6300, and her website is www.debordlawfirm.com, and DeBord is spelled D-E-B-O-R-D-E. Law firm's obviously spelled L-A-W-F-I-R-M, as usual. Please call us, 877-777-7713. And we were talking before the break about DWI and what happens when you get stopped or pulled over. And I think we were going to come back and chat a minute about your rights when you get pulled over.
Well, that's really a fun topic as well. It never ceases to amaze me how many clients or how many people I'll talk to that think, if I tell the police officer that I'm going to do something, or if I agree to go ahead and have them search my vehicle, they're just going to go away. And Daphne, how many times have you learned that that's in fact completely false?
That never happens.
It never
they
happens.
Don't go away.
No, they don't.
They're just so happy to oblige.
Exactly. They're delighted. And the reality is that you have the right to refuse. I mean, I would always recommend for everyone's benefit that you're polite about it. There's no need to be cross. You just say, no, thank you. Or I would like to speak to my lawyer, and you don't have to do anything.
And you could say, on advice of my counsel, I'm refusing to consent to that search, or refusing in the case of DWI to take any tests.
Exactly. And if they really have anything on you at that point, well, then they'll exercise whatever rights they have. But that's not going to change it's not going to get better for you based on the fact that you're agreeing to that search or agreeing to do these exercises that require a fair amount of physical dexterity. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that certain people in certain weight categories, if you're even slightly overweight, you probably don't qualify, according to the National Highway and Safety Transportation people, to do these tests. If you have any kind of physical impairment, you don't. So really, these are not tests for all people. So there's no reason to assume, even if you are not intoxicated, that you're going to perform well on them. So why roll the dice? Because now if you do them and you don't perform well, you're in the box of having to explain why. And why do we open that box in the first place? Many people do. It's really not necessary.
And the police officers don't normally tell you you have a right to refuse that, do they?
Of course not.
Have you seen that happen? I hadn't seen
that
ever happen. They never let them know they have a right. I know I was a passenger in a car once when my good friend, a doctor, not in Houston, was pulled over for DWI, and she wisely said, before I agree to anything, may I speak to my attorney who's in the car?
Well, and I think both of us would stress, you know, obviously, Daphne, neither you nor I want anyone out there driving while intoxicated. It is so easy and everywhere that we go today to get a cab, and that's the best thing to do.
Sure is.
But the fact is it's also it's not against the law to drink alcohol and to drive a vehicle. You just can't do it when you're impaired. So the key thing here is really to make sure that you know what your rights are and that you're not being bullied into doing something that you don't have to do.
That makes sense. Sounds good. Now, do you think that covers the rights there that would be most important, the right to refuse that test, and, of course, the right to refuse a breath test should it be offered later? And, of course, that right that you were talking about they might exercise is the right to arrest you anyway, right?
I think it does. I think it covers it. I mean, in a very small, brief description,
sure,
it does. It's a very complicated area, quite frankly.
Yeah, we could probably come back and do a whole show on DWI sometime.
Really, without a problem.
Yeah. All right. We had talked about that first day in court. And I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to just mention about that is sometimes it seems really long for the client. I've noticed sitting there in court, sometimes the clients seem to be getting a little frustrated. And you want to talk about that a minute?
Sure.
What's going
and
on?
It's not even the first day. I mean, the clients oftentimes on a criminal case are going to have to come back many times to court, and they're going to have to sit there while they don't see anything happening. And what's really going on is the defense attorney is up looking through the file that the prosecutor's brought to court, most likely, and talking with the other side about what the other side is planning to do, what their strategy is, trying to learn as much about your case as possible. That's pretty uneventful for the client, for the accused, as they sit back in the back of the room wondering what their lawyer is doing up there. But it's very important for the lawyer. And these things don't happen quickly. I've gone to court appearance after court appearance on cases where I've asked for something to be included in the file and it's just not there and we have to wait for it. And I don't ever want to be in the position of advising a client either way to do anything until I have all the data.
Now, that sort of covers that first day in court. What criminal procedure-wise happens through the rest of the process that they're dealing with?
Well, as the lawyers conduct their investigations, you know, as the defense attorney gathers their side of the facts and tries to make sure they understand the case from every angle, the prosecution is, of course, trying to do what they can to build their case. The case ultimately gets to a point where the sides are either going to talk about how they want to negotiate out a possible plea deal or how and when they're going to set the case for trial. And if they cannot come to any kind of agreement, either on some sort of a plea deal, either for probation or for a term of incarceration, or for some sort of lesser reduced charge, then the case has to go to trial. That's what trial is for when the parties don't agree. And the trial can be had in front of either a judge or in front of a jury. And I think most folks feel like if they're going to go ahead and roll the dice, they might as well entrust it to six citizens in a misdemeanor or 12 citizens in a felony case.
And so if they let's kind of back up and talk about the first option. If they were to decide to enter a plea, what's the procedure for that?
It varies. It really depends on whether you're going to enter a plea in federal court, whether you're going to do that in state court, and if it's in state court, whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. The most simple process for a plea that you can possibly have is really in state court and misdemeanor court. And in those circumstances, you simply review your rights that you're giving up, essentially by pleading guilty. You know, you're confessing to what you've been charged with. And then you're telling the judge that you understand that you're giving up the right to have a jury trial, and you want to go ahead and take whatever offer has been given, or you're asking for the judge to give you a sentence. And that's what a plea deal is in a very simplified form for misdemeanor court. In felony court, it's a bit more complicated as far as making sure that a person has actually read all of the rights, that they understand what they're giving up, and what the sentencing ranges are, those types of things. Then a person goes before the court, and sometimes that's on the record, and then they're sentenced. In federal court, it's oftentimes done in two parts. A person will go to federal court and plead guilty. Then there's a big report that is written. And then the court essentially chooses the sentence based on a set of criteria that they're wed to based on the guidelines.
Now, that sort of, as briefly but as thoroughly as you possibly could, covers the police. What if they choose a trial and we only have a little bit of time left? What's the general procedure there?
A trial is exactly what it sounds like. You tell the other side that the fight's on and you set your case for trial and you hope that your lawyer is talented enough to paint the most favorable picture for you.
And you'll pick a jury then, and that means just excluding folks that have some concerns that don't fit in with the case, right, and move forward?
Well, and even more basic than that, excluding people who can't be fair in your particular type of circumstance on either side, and those people hopefully are removed, and then you end up with 12 or 6 people, depending, again, misdemeanor or felony, and you tell them your side of the story.
And go forward. Thank you very much. You are listening to Bar Talk on the Biz Radio Network. Daphne Pattison and our special co-host, Nicole DeBoer. Hopefully you will give us a call sometime. If you think of something on these issues, call back. 713-526-6300 is Nicole's number. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Biz Radio Network. Here's the money man, Dan.